again and again and again and again. I want to change this, or at least subtitle the show, The Broken Record Show, because it seems like I have to keep revisiting a lot of the same issues. I know this may shock a lot of people, but I'm a man of very diverse interest, a very, very diverse pursuits. I would love to be able to come on and talk strictly about organic urban agriculture, cultivating the soil, or even go more into detail about the specific benefits of green kale versus purple kale. I'd love to talk, have a whole show just dealing with composting and reinvigorating the soil, returning nutrients to the soil so that we can again become part of the natural carbon cycle of the earth. I'm into that stuff. I would love to strictly have a show just where I talk about my sons and their growth and development over the years and my, you know, parenting philosophy, and talk about my sons absent, you know, the larger struggle, their higher potential for being murdered, accosted, incarcerated, impoverished, homeless, mentally insane, strictly because of their genetic, cultural, and historical heritage. But just talk about what they're into and how their childhood contrasts my childhood, the stuff they're into versus the stuff I was into. Foo-foo, light stuff. Hell, I would even enjoy talking about these celebrities. I mean, they're damn interesting. Who can deny that? And I'm not just talking about their cultural products. I'm talking about their drama. I'm not above that. Like I said, I'm not one of these saviors sent from on high who's above the things other folks are into. I'm not a celibate black leader. I'm not a pious black leader. I cuss, I spit. I don't come to complete stops at all red lights. I'm a human being, you know, a flawed one. Some of y'all probably better than me, but the only thing I can say that I would put up against anyone else is my commitment to the total and permanent liberation of the global African community and the agenda and principles and protocols of Pan-Africanism. I'm absolutely committed to that. But beyond that, a lot of stuff is up for grabs. There's a lot of room to maneuver there. That's the wonderful thing about such an ideology and a movement, that it is truly an inclusive movement. It's not an exclusive cult, a cult of personality. It's kind of hard to for demagogues to arise in that. But I'd like to talk about, 40K lore and video games and strategy games and chess. You know, I'd like that. Perhaps gossip around town, local gossip. I'm all down for that. But unfortunately, I can't go a day without an atrocity, without being acutely reminded of the state of African people in the United States, in Brazil. And let me tell you something. If Black Lives really matters, you will not be supporting, endorsing, promoting, sharing clips of, or watching. And see, this is AM 1160 Q4 Radio under FCC rules. So I have to speak the Queen's English here. You know, because can't curse, in other words. But you will not be engaging with the Rio Olympics. You will not be watching the Rio Olympics if Black Lives Matters. You will not be sharing posts of black folks flipping, dipping, running, jumping under the USA flag, under the Brazilian flag. Both are states founded on genocide, slavery, and still are engaged in genocide and slavery. Of course, Brazil doesn't hold a candle to the United States atrocities, but it's doing its best to. It's united with Russia, India and China to go for the crown of Western imperialism, capitalism, ecocidal, omnicidal oppression and exploitation of other nations. It's doing its damnedest, and some Negroes got the nerve to be proud of that. That black folks are finally learning the empire game. That nations of color are finally joining these reindeer games of omnicidal capitalism. But like I said, every time I turn around, the Congo alone, if every other African on the face of the earth was living a utopian lifestyle, had full rights and full opportunities and all the fiat currency we could spend on Chinese manufactured sweatshop products and Indonesia manufactured, Haiti manufactured sweatshop products, if we all were living that Oprah life, if we were all Barack and Michelle Obamas, and Congo alone should cause a global uprising amongst African people if black lives really mattered. The conditions in Haiti alone should provoke a global uprising of African people, regardless of your status. The conditions of our people in the favelas of Brazil and the treatment of our people in the favelas of Brazil should cause a global African uprising. If we don't internationalize the black struggle is illegitimate. The African American is a fading minority. The Pan-African is an emerging power. So if your identity as a member of the African diaspora does not overshadow all other nationalistic loyalties, if you live outside of Africa, then you got some introspection to do. You got some identity issues. You sipping and swallowed the Kool-Aid. And I'm pretty sure everyone knows what provoked this tone. Sister Corrin Gaines in Randallstown. A young lady who was shot holding her 5-year-old child, who was also shot in front of her infant child. So that's a whole bloodline. That's a whole kinship destroyed, because those children, is there going to be any recovery for that trauma that the children have? Over traffic tickets. And these fascists are telling us that she was holding a shotgun. Now, I've shot a shotgun. I don't like guns. I don't like shooting guns. But I was invited out to a Native American reservation. And, of course, I wanted to shoot a traditional bow. Me being the uncultured, stereotype, perpetuating individual that I am, I'm like, where are the bows? Let's shoot some bows at targets, because I saw they had a range. So he was like, what you talking about? We ain't shooting bows. We shooting guns out here. So they brought out some shotguns and pistols. I mean, some antique and some pretty unique, but some, you know, pump action, double gauged at the range. And I mean, this is after we had sit for hours. We just weren't out there shooting guns. This is after we sat for hours talking about our people's history, our unique conditions. But this is way, way back in the 90s. You know, back when I was part of an organization called the Front, NYC. You know, we opened Think Bookstore, we set up study groups, just same old grassroots, unglamorous, hard, unthankless work of liberating a people who don't seem to be too interested in liberation. They just want comfortable oppression. But anyway, I'm out. I've shot a shotgun. Number one, a shotgun. And I see the size and stature of Sister Corrin. And me, I'm 6'3". I mean, I'm not a hulking guy. I'm a slender guy, but I'm 6'3". I got pretty long appendages. And let me tell you something. I couldn't shoot a damn shotgun while holding a 5-year-old, let alone an infant. I have a 7-year-old son. He was just 5 a couple of years ago. And I picked him up often. I don't pick him up as much now. But I used to pick him up and fling him around and cart him around quite a bit. You know, and my wife and I, we're pedestrians. We take bikes. We walk a lot. We used to have burlies and those running strollers and all kind of apparatus. So we had to tote our kids around quite a bit. We just didn't toss them in the back of a car every time we stepped out of the house. And let me tell you something. I'd like to know the specs of that shotgun. Unless they've invented, I know Taurus, one of my favorite gun manufacturers. And again, I'm not a gun nut, but I grew up in Missouri, you know, so this is just like background. They have like a pistol that shoots shotgun shells. So if you needed a one-handed shotgun, you have, you know, I think it's a 8 cartridge. It's a funny looking, it looks like an oversized cartoonish revolver, not a pistol, a revolver. And you can actually load shotgun shells in there and shoot it like a giant, monstrous, obscene pistol. And, but aside, unless she was holding one of those, but I don't know if that's called, I don't know the name of it. I'm not an ammo sexual. I don't know all the specs and specifics about guns. I know what I know and I can do what I got to do, but I don't have intimate information. So because I'm not an ammo sexual, but this young lady supposedly was holding a 5-year-old in her arms and had a shotgun ready at the ready. And you can't see me, but I'm trying to picture this. And you got a 5-year-old who I'm sure that child wasn't sleeping and resting calmly on her shoulders with a SWAT team, which stands for Special Weapons and Tactics. A military trained, military mobilized, military armed, body armored. Sniper positions, tanks. And I'm sure this 5-year-old wasn't resting calmly. And all this commotion's going on, and you tell me she's got a shotgun at the ready to harm a body armored, full size male? Over traffic tickets? So Corinne Gaines, allegedly. So what's up? And let me tell you something about this, another thing we have to think of. Again, this is not a police problem. Police only reflect and enforce the status quo. Police are not inherently oppressive, and they're not inherently, the police are just a reflection. Police are low-level bureaucrats. Low-level bureaucrats, only thing they know how to do. No change, revolutionary, social change, significant reforms ever comes from these low-level bureaucrats. It's either the people at the top or the people at the bottom. The people in the middle, they just carry out orders. They just reflect the overall tone of the society. Boots Riley once said, "I never seen the police break a strike by hitting the boss with his baton pipe." The police do not provoke social change. They do not dictate the state of the society. They only reflect and act on it. So you can go to some societies where cops don't even carry guns. They don't have body armors. They don't expect the citizens or residents or immigrants or visitors to that state to bow to their every word like trained dogs. Cop says stop, you stop automatically. If you don't, you should be arrested. You should be accosted. You should be detained. Because you didn't obey my command. Who the hell are you? What do you think your job description is? Doesn't matter. What you have to ask is, what is the status quo? And you want to tell me this woman had a gun? Did she discharge the weapon? Show me the buckshots. Did the cops have to go in? Was there a pressing? Was she a threat to the children? It couldn't have been waited out? Because I remember the Bundy Ranch standoff. Remember that? And where was it, in Montana, where these crackers went up with shotguns and weapons and were on social media threatening the cops' lives, and the cops sat out around there for weeks and no one went in because they said if we go in, it could provoke more violence, so we're going to wait them out. Remember that? So now the cops don't wait for people no more? They too busy? They had more traffic tickets to write? What was the rush? Had the children been harmed? Besides anybody other than the police, by the mother? Was there any clear or present or immediate danger? Did the woman have enough provisions in the house to outlast them for 10 years or 10 days? You know, one of the movies, my favorite movies is Dog Day Afternoon, where a couple of crazy dudes went up in the bank, poorly planned bank heist, and they had a bunch of hostages, and they were pretty much threats to the hostages. And the cops waited them out for days. Sent in pizza. Remember that? You watch the old movies. And somebody's barricaded. and they bring in a negotiator. They've made movies about this, people. I know we're not going to read books. We're Americans. You know, so we're not going to read anything but the Bible. And we're not even going to read the Bible. We're just going to extract passages that confirm whatever nonsense delusions we have in our head and ignore all the other passages. We don't read. We're Americans. USA. But I remember in the movies, you see the movies, The Negotiator. I think there was a movie where Sam Jackson played a person who would talk people down. And then he went off and had his own standoff, took over some place. And they sent in another negotiator to negotiate with the negotiator. And remember in the movies, they say negotiator comes. It's like, hey, you're in control. This is your show. We just want to end this without any bloodshed. Tell us, give us your list of demands. You want some pizza? Order up a pizza. Hey, can we send in someone just to check on the kids? He's unarmed. It's a social worker. Hey, we got your mom out here. Your mom wants to talk to you. Baby, please come out. Remember, that's how they used to do, or at least how they did in the movies. But now, guns are blazing. These cowboys, these adrenaline junkies, these pathological, self-hating Uncle Toms. We are the law. You're not the law, police. You are not the law. You are not our rulers. You're not our parents. You're not our owners. You're not our controllers. You are low-level bureaucrats. It used to be public servant. Remember that? Protect and serve. So if you're going to service a warrant for freaking traffic tickets and the person is non-compliant, but beyond being non-compliant, after a history of harassment, personal harassment from the local police, after a news cycle that is saturated with police committing acts of atrocities against black people and the police getting off after committing those atrocities, so any humane, civil, non-psychopathic person would understand, listen, I'm a cop. I can understand why black folks are apprehensive about the cops, and we damn sure know. We know, because if our lives depend on understanding, we know how agitated and how police deal with us. So if you SOBs would have simply said, hey, call her mother out here. Let's get her mother on the phone. You got all of our information. Google sells it to you. Facebook sells it to you. You got all our info. You know what she's into. You know what the young lady's into and she doesn't like. You know who her favorite celebrity is. You know her consumption habits, her travel patterns from her phone. Because Sprint, Verizon, Virgin, they sell you the information. You could have got a profiler and a negotiator out there saying, listen, this is what this young lady's response to. This is what she's interested in. This is her child's favorite toy. Bring the father of the children out there. Bring the mother. Bring the grandmother. Bring her third grade teacher out there. Order up some pizza and negotiate with the young woman. But wait a minute. There's a problem. She wasn't a Yorugu. Because that's how they would have done with white people. When the when the feds came to the Bundy Ranch, they wanted to service over a multi-million dollar warrant. Because Bundy had been grazing illegally on federal lands. He's a welfare pimp. He's a deadbeat. A millionaire deadbeat Bundy. You remember the cracker that said, oh, let me tell you something what I know about the Negro. And white folks were coming from all over, armed to the teeth. With pistols trained on federal agents. And it was resolved without bloodshed. You know, let me go to music, y'all. And I don't, I'm going to have to take a moment. Y'all enjoy this.
The lives of 22 million Afro-Americans. Then all of a sudden, Uncle Sam becomes very conscious of legality. Legality, 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 legality.
Here's the reason that I've been upset for a while. Cause if you're black, you get life. But if you're white, you're on trial. Ain't nothing to it. Just like that chump Charles Stewart. They're always claiming that the devil made me do it for insurance. He killed his wife and his child and blamed it on a brother. And racist got fucked wild. He had the media believing the Aesop fable. And all the whites were like, I can't wait till they catch the bastard. I hope they fry him. They were sure that he did it. There was no need to try him. And Willie Bennett, who was in it to win it, got bashed and harassed because they were sure that he did it. And the thing that really pissed me off and truly offended me is the suckers wanted to reinstate the death penalty for a brother man, but not the other man. And when they found out he killed to himself, on the other hand, now it's inhumane. Bring it back, they wouldn't dare. But his brother confessed he was with it, so give him the chair. But that won't happen with that punk caucus. Flynn and Mickey Roach, you better just watch for us. I don't want to hear that you're sorry to me. After you tore up and started a war up in the black community, it's out of the news, but it's still in my head. Charles Stewart still lives, even though the sucker's dead. I'ma speak upon him.
He is trying to wipe you out, trying to eliminate your total existence with falsehood and lies, and he's succeeding in doing it.
Now here's a verse about a relative that could have lived but killed by a cop that thought negative. Shot in the back like a victim of Jesse James.
Tell him his motherfucking name.
Philip Pinnell, murdered by a devil that never saw a cell. So I'm here to raise hell and tell about a child that was left to decay. In the next couple of days, the pig was suspended with pay, receiving support from cops and superior courts. And all we receive is a bullet inside a corpse. Now tell me, what type of justice has been done? What would have happened if I shot his son? I would have been killed, taken to a chamber and filled up with gas. But yet nothing has happened to Spad, so I had to take two extra steps and put it on wax, cause I couldn't let it rest.
Why?
Cause I can't stand to see Satan smile and get away with taking the life of a child. You're meant to do it, so now your motto is,
tell him,
the more bullets, the less blacks live.
You better
watch your back, you murderer, because you're warning. But for now, yo, I guess I gotta speak upon it.
We've got to come together, pool our efforts, our strength, our finance, and build our own nation. The Chinese did it, it's called Chinatown.
Let me speak upon this with a radical take as I take time to talk about the systematical breakdown and deliberate destruction through miseducation of the Nubian nation. Starting in kindergarten, continuing through college, they continue to kick you trick knowledge and call it education, but I call it training. Washing your brain into gaining and maintaining the American dream, but to me it's a nightmare because it keeps you right where they want you to be, mentally, physically, and monetarily, as you go merrily, merrily, merrily down the stream. But it's more like up Schitt's Creek. Without a paddle when the boat's got a leak, we start drowning in all that shit getting deeper. Mine's in a chokehold, or should I say a sleeper? But I ain't going out like Rip Van Winkle, so you can't gas me up anymore. And I think you know that I can see clearly now. The rain is gone, it's bright outside. I see the light, and I'ma speak upon it. You know what I'm saying? Cause all that shit they taught me in school amounted up to zero.
Word is born.
Abraham Lincoln ain't my motherfucking hero. You know what I'm saying?
That devil ain't my hero neither.
Word up. Yo, this is that Jeff, the poet with soul. Cooling with my man Eddie OG on a funky, 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 funky track.
Yeah. Bulldogs is out there, you know what I'm saying?
I'm falling, and I can't get up.
We're sending help immediately, Mrs. Fletcher.
Dear Mr. Chief of Police, excuse my handwriting, but try to understand that I hurt us with a broken hand. I'm just one out of many from the inner city who's been a victim of unseen police brutality. Beaten with a billy club until I became numb. Picked the whip bruises on my face from a handgun. They said that I was speeding, going over the limit. But when they pulled me over, man, they never gave me a ticket. They just said I better stick both of my hands up. My window real slow, I beat one dead Negro. But I was used to the routine. I moved at a slow pace, cause I don't wanna be a mistake. But that's when your boys got the tripping on me. Put me in my car and it both started kicking on me. I ain't no puncher bag, man. My name ain't Grady. I'm ready for a cop to be beating me anytime that he's ready. So I drop to my knees and I cover my head tight. But that's when he bust me in the neck with a flashlight. But still I stayed calm and took the pain. Picturing my ancestors going through the same thing. But then I started thinking about the brother from Altadena who was the same. I was the next on the agenda, so I got a flip hurdle. Hit the corner with flashbacks of Hitler, chasing Jesse Owens. But when I woke up, another black and a white when paralyzed, weighs down from a bullet wound. And now I'm being charged for resisting arrest. But it was either catch a bullet or be beaten to death. Now for the rest of my life, I got tubes connected to my lungs. Just because your boys wanted to have fun. So here's a complaint to let the whole world know. This is what goes on behind closed doors.
Doors.
up on the streets after five long hard years. I did my time on concrete and still tears. Nope, it wasn't the crime of the century. And nope, I didn't enjoy the penitentiary. But that was in the past, now I'm back on the pavement. With 2 years to go on full probation. It feels kinda good not to carry a shame. I got $500 on my way to the bank. Uh-oh, here come a black and white. I'm gonna get jacked tonight. And it's officer all white, the same crooked cop from a long time ago. Who planted an ounce in my homie El Camino. With a smile on his face, he said, welcome back, nigga. Had his partner on the side with his finger on the trigger. I knew the routine, so I assumed the position. Tried to search it through my pockets like he was on a mission. Yo, came up with my knocks and look what I got. I said, that's money that I made in the metal shop. As he put it in his pocket, said, in the conversation. And you better start walking or face a violation. I looked him in the eyes and knew he was a punk. Another sissy with a badge just trying to front. I told him, take off your gun or we could go some. And if you win from the shoulders, you can have our funds. He didn't hesitate through the first one. But quickly I ducked and went straight for the nuts.
And did you knock him out?
Yep. And that's when his partner put his gun on my side and said, get in the trunk, punk, we're going for a ride. They took me to a hood that my hood was fueled with. Locals in the park, drinking 40s and kicking it. Chilling, getting wet, waiting for a bit. They let me out the trunk and said, sick. That's how the story goes. What? In a rat hole, cause I'm a second class citizen. What? Behind closed doors.
Are your friends?
Anyone who's ever tried to live knows this. So what you say about somebody else, you know, anybody else, reveals you. What I think of you as being is dictated by my own necessities, my own psychology, my own fears and desires. I'm not describing you when I talk about you. I'm describing me. Now, here in this country, we've got something called a nigger. It doesn't in such terms, I beg you to remark, exist in any other country in the world. We have invented the nigger. I didn't invent him. White people invented him. I've always known, I had to know by the time I was 17 years old, what you were describing was not me, and what you were afraid of was not me. It had to be something else. You had invented it, so it had to be something you were afraid of, and you invested me with. Now, that's so. No matter what you've done to me, I can say to you this, and I mean it. I know you can't do any more, and I've got nothing to lose. And I know, and I've always known, you know, and really always, that's part of the agony. I've always known that I'm not a nigger. But if I am not the nigger, and if it's true that your invention reveals you, then who is the nigger? I am not the victim here. I know one thing from another. I know I'm going to be born and I was born, I'm going to suffer, and I'm going to die. And the only way you get through a life is to know the worst things about it. I know that a person is more important than anything else. Anything else. I learned this because I've had to learn it. But you still think, I gather, that the nigger is necessary. Well, it's unnecessary to me, so it must be necessary to you. I give you your problem back. You're the nigger, baby, it isn't me.
Take This Hammer, filmed with James Baldwin in the spring of 1963, was produced for National Educational Television by the KQED Film Unit, San Francisco.
I'm sorry. The mic was muted. And sorry for that delay. Anyway, wow. Just a little off today. How long was that dead air? A good 40 seconds to a minute? Wow. Anyway, we'll clean it up in the post edit. You know, because that's the American way. We can edit out anything, even genocide and oppression. I played WC in the Mad Circle. First, I started off before I went into the 30-minute break, which wasn't really official. Again, you listen to Q4 Radio, AM 1160. But before I went into the break, I first played Ed OG and the Bulldogs. And I believe he's from Baltimore, where the most recent televised atrocity. And when we talk about police assaults and police atrocities, we have to say televised. Because there are dozens that we don't know about. And we can't, and so we can't fall into thinking that just the ones we see, the ones CNN report on, the ones that get a hashtag are the ones that happen. You know, so televised, reported, recorded atrocities. Because there's atrocities going on all over this nation that we will never, there are hashtags that go unhashtagged, names that go unsaid, marches that go unmarched, protests that go unprotested in the names of African people who have suffered severe atrocities, up to and including unnecessary loss of life and injury that we won't know about. So when I say the latest televised atrocity or latest publicized atrocity, that's in recognition to that there are many that we don't know about. Because a lot of people think they're hip because they know, you know, Sandra Bland, you know, Brother Alton, and Trayvon, because we know those names, but there are many that we don't know. Many people that don't get celebrity attention. Many people die who don't have the family support to get their name out, to get the atrocity exposed. So, again, when we're talking about these atrocities, when they're in the popular media, when they're reported by the corporate media, when there is our celebrities who speak on it, when the ones that provoke Jordan to give a paltry sum of $1 million, and then he cancels out that $1 million by giving the oppressor $1 million. It's like, I guess, I mean, you know, Jordan is famous for being one of the most competitive men in the world. So I guess he likes to see this competition between the unarmed, oppressed black community and the fully armed, fully sanctioned, fascist, status quo enforcers of the police departments. So he gives us both $1 million and say, have at it, I suppose. You know, Jordan, if you're a self-respecting black man, you will not be found in Jordans or any Nikes. You know, and yes, this is coming from a man who's never bought a pair of Nike, because I went from being unable to afford Nikes and being cool with that to, in my young years, just out of college, single, no children, to being able to afford Nikes and consciously never buying a pair of Jordans, to back to two children mortgage, to now again being unable to. But in all the times, whether I had the disposable capital or not to buy Jordans, I've never made that choice to do so. But shut them down, man. And I'm not even saying boycott Jordan for any other reason than it's the biggest. So this whole nation is a prison for us. And what do they say, you know, a lot of the comedy movies say, when you go to prison, what do you do first to establish yourself? You go up to the biggest dude on the block and you knock the fire out of him, the biggest cat in the yard, and you hit him. Now, that's not, I wouldn't do that if I went to prison. But, I mean, I think it's more applicable in the prison of America than actual prison yard. Nike is the biggest. Apple is the biggest, you know. Whatever is the biggest, whatever NFL, Super Bowl is the biggest, shut it all down. Just go up to the biggest level of pomp and circumstance and Western capitalist investment and divest from it. And then you got, after Nike, after Apple products, there's several other products, phones and computers and junk, you know. After Jordan after the Super Bowl, there's so much other ball chasing. There's so many other opportunities to watch adult men in tight clothes chase balls, you macho, hetero men. There's other opportunities to watch men, sweaty men, chase balls. You don't have to. You can divest from the biggest just to send us indirect. This is asymmetric warfare. You have a well-armed, an enemy with superior arms that is well-entrenched. So you don't face them head-on. You don't go straight at them. You come from the sides. But did I even finish telling you what I played? WC in the Mad Circle featuring Coolio. From the classic Slept On album, Ain't a Damn Thing Changed. I blame y'all for having WC join Uncle Ice Cube and Uncle Mac 10, those two clowns. Because WC was actually a conscious rapper that had some very, very poignant music. You know, he did a bid in prison and he busted a Malcolm X. WC was with this group, I think In Too Deep. No, it wasn't In Too Deep. Point Blank. It was some group. I think they put out a maxi single or something. Then he got locked up. And his homeboy went on and tried to pursue a record deal without him. Betrayal, abandonment, something most of us brothers, especially in the struggle, know about. So he came out, and he was like, I'm at the bottom. And while he was in prison, he saw the naked injustice, just like Gucci Mane. But unlike Gucci Mane, he didn't just say, I'm going to change my own personal life for the better. I'm going to articulate a positive message to my people. I'm going to tell my people about what's going on and offer some insights about what we can do about this oppression. So he came out with Ain't a Damn Thing Changed, WC in a Mad Circle. MAD stood for Mad Circle. Community Alliance Against Anti-Discrimination, something like that. That's what Circle said. The name was an acronym. But he recruited Coolio of all people. He's the one who launched Coolio with this conscious rap album, this politically conscious, politically charged hip hop album. And y'all didn't buy it. I bought it. See, I just heard that the Fugees' first album, Translator Crew, they used to be called Translator Crew. And their first album was called Blunted on a Reality. And they had a three-headed baby with Bill Clinton heads, three Bill Clinton heads on a baby's body. It was weird. And somebody was holding the baby upside down. And it was called Translator Crew. And it was one of those rough 90s, like grunge rap. Rap got grungy in the 90s, and we didn't know, rah, 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 buck, buck. You know, rap went grungy in the 90s, and they were just coming in on the tail end of that. But it was some insights there, and I always want to support a Haitian rap group that represented the plight of Haitian people. But they were called Translator Crew, Refugees Translator Crew. But anyway, I bought that album. I bought a lot of obscure albums. Some of them I still have, some I don't. But y'all didn't buy it, so then he had to go crip walking and sag his pants and go gangbanging styles and chang, chang, chang and talk gibberish about clubbing and women and money and guns and drugs. Because then that's when he was like, okay, now marketable. But I don't blame the people because I understand. That's a whole nother topic. Anyway, that's a long way to say I played Behind Closed Door, WC, Mad Circle featuring Coolio. And then I played in Who's the Nigger? Which is an interview excerpt from the late, great author, James Baldwin. If you're not into reading, if you just prefer to watch, get your knowledge and wisdom and understanding from various YouTube personalities, in between the time you're waiting for Brother Polite or King Noble to drop another knowledge-saturated YouTube video, pick up a James Baldwin book. Every library has them. You know. And I'm telling you, if you know non-readers who is like, I'm not really into that reading stuff, give them a James Baldwin book. I mean, that brother. Anyway, like I said, I was getting into, before I failed to unmute my mic, after the musical interlude and the excerpt, I was saying that we have another monumental day. Today, August 3rd, is the birthday of the late, great, Almighty Dr. Edward Wilmot Blyton, a.k.a. the father of Pan-Africanism. I first learned about Wilmot Blyton after reading John Henry Clark. John Henry Clark said that he was one of the greatest Pan-Africanists who ever lived, if not the first Pan-Africanist who ever lived. He was born August 3rd, 1832 in the Caribbean. And he, well, back in the day, they used to call Africa Ethiopia, all of Africa. It was the land of Ethiopia. Ethiopia was looked at. It wasn't until the Hoteps, actually the Hoteps, I guess, in the late 1800s would be called Ethiopians because they, like the way folks just obsess about Ethiopia, not Ethiopia, about Egypt, Kemet, you see the ankhs all through the cultural community. Everybody got ankhs. Some guys go so far as wear the Kemetic royal hairdresses. You know, I even seen some dude with like the haircut with the head completely shaved except for a ponytail, but it's a ponytail's on the side of the head. And I think that was the haircut for Egyptian nobility or something. I mean, black folks are enamored with Egypt. And that big, massive continent full of so many dynasties, so many unique cultures. Black folks just real stuck. And I mean, there's a lot of African scholars who live pretty good mounting tours to Egypt. I mean, I even wrote a poem about it called We Was. Someday, if I get a request, I'll read some of my poems on the air. But I talked about just this historical, using history as kind of like an ego adrenaline boost. Look what we did way back when. But I think our fascination with Egypt is a byproduct of white folks' obsession and fascination with Egypt. I think if they were just as obsessed and fascinated with Dogon culture, you know, or the Mali, or the Zulus, or with any culture, if they were obsessed, I think black folks would be obsessed with that because, you know, even in our resistance of white folks, we follow white folks. But Erewhonmine Blyton was actually a student of Zionism and Theodore Herzl. And even though he was born in the Caribbean, he repatriated back home to Africa, to Liberia, married a Liberian woman, and which was the African colonization, American Colonization Society, which we have to look into. But he was a journalist, he was a writer, he was an organizer. But his main profession as a journalist. But one thing he did was he founded what was initially called Ethiopianism, which was an African version of Zionism, which was the establishment of a state for the African diaspora, which is a rallying point and a rallying, uniting ideology for the African diaspora, all Africans outside of the continent of Africa, a landmass and an ideology to unite that we can all contribute to. Whether we move there, which was one of the goals, but even if we remained in our captive nations, we would have somewhere to identify with, to receive marching orders and to make contribution to. And he called it Ethiopianism, but later it came to be called Pan-Africanism. Under Garvey, or the Back to Africa movement under Garvey, and later, and at the same time, Back to Africa. But Erewhonmine Blyton, and it's spelled Edward Ewward W. Wilmot Wilmot Blyton, Blyden. Today is his birthday. He was born August 3rd, 1832. But fortunately, in the Caribbean, had the British Empire had quote-unquote abolished slavery before the United States quote-unquote abolished slavery. They both still engage in slavery, slave trade, sex trafficking, white slavery, you know, colonization. There's nothing that the United States did that it ain't still doing. Nothing. Genocide, land theft, and distorting reality and the truth of the matter. There's nothing. History is never in the past, to quote Dr. John Henry Clark, who is the great man who introduced me to the ideologies and writings and life of Erewhonmine Blyton in Black August. Now back to this issue of the status quo. We are not fighting police brutality. Because it doesn't make sense to fight police brutality in an isolated way. Because if you're only addressing police brutality, that's like you have a hornet's nest at your home. And instead of detaching the hornet's nest, or doing whatever people do when they deal with a hornet's nest, and it's constantly stinging you, your elders, your family, these hornets are a major pest. And what you decide to do is say, let's go hornet by hornet. You capture that hornet, you capture that hornet, you kill it, you capture, take it out to the countryside and release it if you're humane. Whatever you do with this hornet, but instead of dealing with the source, the foundation, because every hornet you capture, there's about a dozen hornet larvae ready to replace that one you capture. So what you're going to have to do, not saying that you should say, well, the hornets that are here, I'm just going to allow them to attack and sting us. And while we focus on the source, you can do both. You can put up nets. You can do things to defend yourself. You can inform and educate your children on how to navigate around it or through the area. And you can target the source. You can target the individuals. And you can target or you can educate yourself on how to navigate as you work to target and alleviate the danger at its source and as it disperses through the home or the area. You can do it all at the same time. And in fact, that's the most effective thing. But if you only focus on, I'm going to let the hornets not only have their source, have their nest, but I'm going to also not deal with them as they fly around. I'm just going to strictly focus on telling my children how to deal with it. Have them wear long sleeves and long shirts and head coverings and neck coverings and tell them to walk this way, talk this way, behave this way. When you see a hornet, do this, do that, and leave everything else. Or you can say, well, I understand my children. They're growing. They want to be free. Children are curious. They have a right to do that. So I'm going to let the children be free. But I'm just going to swat every hornet I see. Swat, 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 swat. Inefficient. Inefficient. It may make you feel good like, oh, I got rid of that hornet. I got rid of that one. That hornet is under suspended with pay or had to do a desk job after the stinging. So that hornet is taken care of. Or the leader, the queen of the hornet, had to resign and they appointed a new queen of the hornet's nest. If hornet's nests have queens. Yeah, a victory. You know, you could do it that way, which is also inefficient. Which in a way makes the hornet's nest stronger. It reinforces the hornet's nest. Because as they overcome each of your ineffective challenges or your, you know, superficial reforms, they come back even stronger. So you say, I got to target the nest. It's the same thing. We need institutional change. This is the status quo. Oppression, black under-resourcing, black miseducation is a universal status quo. And again, because the police carry guns and ride around in tanks and have body armor, it's more recognizable. But people in lab coats do more damage to the black community than people in body armor. I know that may sound crazy to you, because a needle in the arm, or the lack of a needle in the arm, because misprescribed medications, you know, because inadequate, negligent, or even hostile and deliberate homicidal treatment, all of that does more of our people in. You know, people working in food manufacturing, food industry, food distribution, food storage. That does more harm. It physically cripples us and causes us more premature death than the police. I know I've said this all. This is the Broken Record Show. But can I get a week without an atrocity, a televised atrocity, a publicized atrocity? But then I guess I probably still wouldn't be able to get into celebrity gossip. I got a brief moment to talk about Malia's twerking or attempts at twerking. But I have to keep coming back to this. And I think black folks need to blame Obama. Because Obama keeps telling us he venerates the police. He tells us that the police are out here risking their lives every day, even though being a farmer is a more dangerous job than being a cop. Being a trash collector. I don't know what the appropriate name. If I knew it, I'd use it because I believe in political correctness. I believe in being accurate. We called it the trash man, not just the disrespect, but trash men, trash collectors. They do more to protect the society than the police do. And now they're saying, not only do the police brutalize us when we resist their atrocities, when we seek to hold them accountable for their atrocities, they got the nerve to say, well, we're going to draw back on our policing coverage. We're going to deny you the benefits of our policing. So now, even in the city of Chicago, for the coming extended Labor Day weekend, the policeman union is asserting that they're encouraging all officers to refuse to take overtime because they can't mandate overtime on police officers, apparently. So they're saying we're going to understaff the police department, deliberately understaff the police department on what has historically been a very rambunctious and violent holiday weekend. And so the police department is saying that you have the nerve. We don't want to hear about Rakia Boyd, Laquinn McDonald, and the many other nameless, faceless people. How dare black youth activists in Chicago block our access to our black site torture chamber? We got our own little Guantanamo Bay here in Chicago, if you didn't know. How dare you people stand up and profess to be humans? Profess that we work for you. So I tell you what, we're going to encourage slaughter. We're going to encourage violence and lawlessness so that when we do come back to dehumanize you, you will be thankful for it. You will appreciate us better. So this is a challenge to black folks. Let's demonstrate that the police do not reduce crime. And they do this after decades of disarming the black community, of subverting our revolutionary organizations, of funding, supporting, arming, and supplying criminals in our community. So they set up the conditions. It's called the Hegelian dialectic. Synthesis and thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. You create a problem, and then you give the solution to the problem you created, which further entrenches or validates your problem, your issue. So the elites deindustrialize Chicago. Well, the rednecks run us out of Mississippi, run us out of the Deep South, where the vast majority of us didn't live, where we were detained, where we were held captive. Then they opened those cages and ran us out of the South after stealing over $1 trillion of wealth from our ancestors. That's why, you know, you could spit in the face of any black person that's talking about how we deal with our money or how we don't deal with our money, about how we need to work hard. There's a new video floating around social media where some young man is talking about, well, you got to work hard in life. For what? For what? And if you were really honest in this capitalist system, you'd say, well, you got to steal hard. You got to kill hard. But working hard, steal hard, kill hard. I don't know any wealth in this nation that is not rooted in massive exploitation, blood, ecocide. Give me a fortune that's not. Even these tech industry. The tech industry is kept afloat on a blood of the Congolese. The coltan, blood coltan. The tech industry is kept afloat by the rare earth minerals coming out of the Congo, coming out of Afghanistan. Everywhere you find the essential resources needed to keep Silicon Valley afloat, this is a place of utter chaos because the U.S. government and capitalism does not want to pay market rates for those raw and natural resources. Sister was just telling me that there are tech companies all over Ghana extracting mineral wealth for Ghana to construct cell phones and computers, and you can't even buy a decent cell phone in Ghana. So even if you want to pretend, well, this guy isn't an Oreo baron. This is a nerd. This is a guy who made $1 billion sitting at a computer, writing code, constructing algorithms. Let me tell you, nobody has done $1 billion worth of work. I don't know anybody that's done multi-millions of dollars worth of work. So if you are a millionaire, a multi-millionaire, a billionaire, you are a parasite. You are a thief. You have the blood of humanity on your hands, and I don't respect you. And let me tell you something. Everybody out here talking about we need a minimum wage. If you don't have a maximum wage, then a minimum wage is absolutely irrelevant. If you don't put a ceiling on the economy, you can't. The floor of the economy is irrelevant. It's going to be damaged, wilted, and irrelevant. So you got to forget the minimum wage. We need to work on a maximum wage. And it's all stolen anyway. They didn't work for it. Jordan never spent a day in a sweatshop for his billions. Yeah, he chased balls like nobody else could chase balls. But that didn't, besides some emotional stimulation, some ego inflation for damaged black males, it ain't really done nothing for your life. I've seen brothers play the NBA 2K, and get just as excited watching digital representations of men chase balls as they saw and yell and scream and pat each other on the back. It's all the same. It don't really mean that much. Fantasy basketball and all that, it ain't real. This ain't real life. Those men chasing those balls don't contribute nothing to society. And if we were truly educated as opposed to being mass indoctrinated, we'd realize that. I'm not anti-sports. Anybody that knows me personally knows I'm willing to get, I play basketball. I love to spar. I love to do kickboxing, capoeira. And if I had the body for it, one of my favorite sports was football. I love playing football. Nothing brought me more joy than going to see my son to play basketball. And I hooped and hollered just like these brothers do when they watch millionaires chase balls. So I'm not anti-sports. I'm anti-capitalism. And the thing that capitalism corrupts, the moment you put a price on something, you corrupt it. If it's free and open to the community, I'm all for local sports, community sports. I'm even down for pro sports, but I'm not for pro sports as it advances capitalism. Y'all go to see these ball games and you see they got the fighter pilots zooming overhead. That's nationalism. That ain't sports. That's jingoism. That's not promoting fair play. That's promoting the most toxic elements of warfare and conflict. It's simulated conflict to get the people. So when people get the same level of emotional stimulation when it's time for the ball games as when it's time to go off the war. And they have ticker tape parades for the champions, just like they have ticker tape parades for the U.S. Imperial Army when it comes back from yet another slaughter of innocent people, of people who pose no existential threat or any type of threat to the United States government, dropping $1 million bombs on $10 tents. So it's just conditioning. That's all it is. And 9 times out of 10, you find somebody that's all caught up in this ball chasing pro sports nonsense. They're the same people that's USA that are pro war, pro military, pro police. It all goes together. You can't support simulated imperialism, simulated warfare. Before long, you're going to be down with actual warfare. And you're investing times, hours and hours and hours and hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, billions of dollars in this. I mean, that's something we got to get into. That's something we have to examine as a people. As black men, even black nationalists will be like, yo, yeah, for the people, we got to get in the streets. Hold on, the game's on. We got to wrap this up before the games or get into it after the game. But the game is on. It is frightening. There have been times I have gone out into my community and the Super Bowl or the playoff game is on and the streets are empty. The streets are empty. And when it's time for the season's premiere of, what is it, Empire? Season premiere of Scandal. When it's time for Black Friday shopping. When it's time for Christmas holiday shopping. Brothers, get real loose with that boycott talk. I hear it. I see the post. Boycott, boycott, boycott. But then when it comes around time for the Super Bowl, when it comes around time for the playoffs, brothers, back up off that boycott talk. You know, I bet you, I'd like to see Farrakhan call a Million Man Farce to coincide with the airing of the Super Bowl. Let's really see who's down. But then again, you won't escape it. Every phone, every brother out there will be on his phone watching the highlight, watching the pregame show. And you know you better watch up them, wrap up them empty speeches from the podium before the actual game starts. So there's ways around everything, I suppose. But I mentioned, and don't think I forgot, this is Obama's fault. Black people have endured every liability for electing a black president of a openly hostile, racist white nation, and have gained none of the benefits of electing a black president of an openly hostile, racist nation. What do I mean by that? I don't care what you believe. It's obvious that the United States is a racist nation. Whenever there is any kind of examination into racial bias, whether it's the job market, they'll have a person with a black sounding name, not even confirmed to be black, and a person with a white sounding name with the exact same stats on the resume. They send the resume to a company that's looking for a person, and each person is idea, right? Every single time, the black person doesn't get the call back, the white person does get the call back. And then they'll flip it. They'll say, we'll give the black sounding name person higher credentials, make them more qualified, and give the black white person fewer qualifications, and send in the resume, the white person gets a call back, the black resume gets shredded. And then real estate, they'll have a black person and a white person, exact same credit standards, exact same income, all the same socioeconomic indicators. They go into real estate, black person walks through the door, they don't even pretend. We don't have any vacancies. We don't have any real estate available. Sorry that we meant to pull that advertisement for a condo available. We meant to take that down. Sorry, goodbye. White person walks in, oh, we have several units. Let me walk you through. Let's expedite. You know, in every aspect, black people do more drugs. Black folks get policed more for drugs. Arrested more for drugs, tried more for drugs, and incarcerated more for drugs, even though we do less drugs than white folks. We got less money for drugs, even if we wanted to do more drugs than white. They stole our money. They stole trillions of dollars of wealth from us. On a daily basis, they stealing from us, so we ain't even got the money to do the drugs if we wanted to do the drugs. And don't even get into alcohol stats. White folks drink more. White folks drive more. Black folks get arrested for drinking, driving more. Medical. Look at the medical industry. Black children go in for appendicitis. White child goes in for appendicitis. They find, without exception, the white child gets more pain management, drugs, and or treatment, and more sensitive to the suffering and discomfort of the white child than the black child. The children. That child ain't even got a chance to sell crack, join a gang, or whatever else white people like to imagine that we do. White people kill cops more. White people assault cops more. White people commit more acts of terrorism. White people go on more acts of random mass shootings. But black folks are consistently seen as more dangerous. You get a group of any citizens, a baker, a candlestick maker, a housekeeper, daycare center, you show them this picture, blacks and whites. Who looks like a criminal? You take a 3-year-old white child, show him a black man and a white man photo. White man in a suit, black man in a suit. Ask the white child, which one of those is the criminal? The black child points at the black man. You take a white man with a mullet cut, a forehead swastika tattoo, a black man in glasses and a suit. Ask the white child, which one of those is the criminal? the black man is still the criminal. What's even more telling, you take a black child. You give it a black doll and a white doll, and you ask that child, which doll is dirty? The black doll. Which doll is ugly? The black doll. So this is a racist nation. And it is so thoroughly racist. Racism is so thoroughly indoctrinated into all elements of human relations, all aspects of human relations and interactions, that even black people are not immune. Even black people accept the anti and articulate the anti-black propaganda of this system. It's so thorough. But it's also thorough in its sexism and misogyny that you have women running around talking about slutty women invite rape. You know, so, you know, there's women that are literally internet superstars because they talk, you know, about how they submit to their men and how, you know, women who are submissive and ladylike don't get assaulted, don't get disrespected. And women that do get assaulted and disrespected. Yeah, these are their women. Maybe I'll have a couple of these internet celebrities on the show. Because, I mean, I don't know them personally, but I've had direct conversations with them via social media about their ideas and their memes. You know, and we love creating fantasies about the Curry family, about the Obama family, about the Cosby family and the Huxtable fictional family. We don't recognize fiction when it's real, and we don't recognize reality when it's fiction. So this is a thoroughly racist nation. So you put a black man as a figurehead in a thoroughly racist nation, you're going to have responses. Black people will respond by going to sleep, by supporting fascist, oppressive, capitalist, imperialistic policies that we knew better. When Reagan was doing it, it was bad. When Obama was doing it, it was acceptable. It was encouraged. We trusted Obama. So when Obama said, I'm bombing them for a good reason, we said, okay, he must be telling the truth, because would Obama bomb people for any other reason than they fully deserve to be bombed? Would Obama advance trade deals that will further devastate already economically devastated communities if it wasn't for our own good? So we used Obama presidency to lull ourselves into a false sense of integration, equality, and achievement. We use the Obama presidency to further beat down the poor black people, telling them, look, this Harvard-educated Negro made it to the presidency, so you can't complain about your, when you come and tell me, oh, you know, I wanted to do something with my life, but the schools are crap. The food I was fed was crap. The housing project that I live was toxic. From the drywall to synthetic carpet, to the shoddy appliances. Everything in my life was crap. That don't matter. Number one, you ain't worthy of better. Number two, so what? You should still achieve. Because I don't recognize your humanity, that you can fall subject to oppression and subhuman conditions. I still expect you to overachieve. And that is a discounting of people's humanity. That is a lack of empathy. So we used Obama to lull ourselves into a false sense of acceptance. And we used the Obama presidency to beat down other black people who didn't line up behind Obama fast enough, who had the nerve. Now, Obama was the only black man on the planet that Negro elites were willing to allow to blame the white man for their failings. Obama failed to close Guantanamo Bay, to put a moratorium on foreclosures. Obama failed to extend unemployment benefits. Obama failed to even acknowledge police brutality until he was damn near forced to. Right? But whenever Obama failed, you could say it's the white man or the Republicans. White man is the only, hey man, it's the white man. Now, if a homeless man comes up to you with a cup in his hand and say, hey, I tried to get a job, but the white man won't let me get a job, you'll damn near spit in his face. But Obama comes and say, I tried to close Guantanamo, but the white man wouldn't let me close. Oh, Obama, you poor dear. Here's another campaign contribution. Here's my vote, and here's my blind support for all of your fascist policies. How come Obama's the only one that allowed? For years, Negroes ran around, including Cosby. Can't blame the white man. Can't blame the white man. Can't blame the white man. And the white man, I always want to use the white man as an excuse. It ain't the white man. We're our own worst enemies. Why didn't Obama get that? I don't want to hear you blame the white man, the Republican Obama. If you fail, it's your fault because America gives you all opportunity. America is a land. So if you fail, Obama, it ain't because you're treasonous because you lied on the campaign trail. It ain't because of the white man. It's your own personal failings. You know, if you fail to give back because, you know, Chicago and the United States political system is a system of reciprocity. There's an old political saying, you got to dance with who brought you to the ball, meaning that you got to kick back to whoever got you into office. And I don't care what source of polling and statistical analysis you look up, all of them say without the black vote, Obama would have never been president, let alone president twice, because he never got the majority of white voters. He didn't even get enough white Democratic votes, let alone the entire nation. So Obama wouldn't have been president. But Obama, we brought him to the dance. We dressed that pig up, put him in the backseat of the limo, put a little corset, whatever on his lapel, and drove his behind to the ball. Then carried him across the red carpet on our shoulders and set him down. And he danced with the gays. He danced with the Jews. He danced with all Jews, because if you're an anti-Zionist Jew, Obama ain't got no love for you. He danced with the Zionists. He danced with. He at least put the immigrants on his dance card, but they never got their dance either. In fact, he had the immigrants kicked out the back of the ball because they didn't bring the proper invitation. He danced with the LGBT community. He danced with the hedge fund manager, international bankers. He danced with some people that snuck in the ball that didn't belong there, like the oil oligarchs in the Middle East. Ukrainian fascist. He danced with the Islamic fundamentalists, quote unquote, freedom fighters in Libya, in Syria. But he never danced with us. He sung for us. He danced in front of us, but he never danced for us. And we brought him there and kept him there. Obama, as the chief executive, could have sent the attorney general and said any police department involved in atrocities, I'm sending in the FBI. I'm sending in the IRS, because he doesn't need approval from Congress to investigate anything. He has his own private investigating bodies that he independently controls. And he's like, if you don't want every book, every bullet you ever paid for to be examined, he could have said federal funds, no more army surplus tanks, no more army surplus technology, helicopters, body armor, nothing is leaving. It's all going to stay in the warehouses on federal land outside of your jurisdiction. He can mobilize and he can federalize and mobilize the National Guard and say, I will have. I mean, there's so many infinite number of radical things he could do in order to say, hey, black folks got me here. I'll throw them a bone. Because he threw us a lot of bones, but there wasn't one scrap of meat left on that doggone bone. The marrow was sucked out of that bone. All it was a bone. But wait, we chewed on that bone like it was like a succulent steak, I guess, because we still love Obama. But then there was the other side of the Obama election. White people, since the signing of the Emancipation Proclamation, white nationalists have been asserting that black people are taking over this country. And it's the most, regardless of the data, you ask the average white person in what we call flyover country outside of the major cities, what percentage of America are black people? And these white nationalists say black people make up 50% of the country. Black people make up 80% of the country. Black people make up 90% of the country. White people really believe, that there's this campaign that gangbangers who've never even been to rural America are conspiring. I mean, we just had a politician in Jersey, I believe, say that black men come to get black to take white girls and corrupt white girls. And it's all pure psychological projection. Because everything white people swear that black people are conspiring to do, plan to do, white people have a long history of actually doing. from taking our women, taking over countries, committing genocide, stealing resources. We don't do that. There are white people who really believe we buying Cadillacs with food stamps in the hood. So what happens after Obama's elected? It confirms all of their irrational fears about black people. And what do? They buy guns, record sale of guns, and they join right-wing organizations, and they begin to donate money to right-wing organizations from the Klan on up to the Legitimate Heritage Foundation, to the Chicago School of Economics. All of this right-wing nonsense exploded under Obama. And Obama could have sent in the FBI, like Janet Reno under Bill Clinton. They brought hell to the militia movement. Janet Reno had a task force that only focused on right wingers. He could have went after the motorcycle gangs. And he doesn't even have to say, well, they arm themselves for white nationalist revolution. But he could have said they're importing meth, they're trafficking in sex slaves, in child pornography. Because under capitalism, if the money can be made doing something, it's going to get done. That's capitalism. I'm anti-capitalism because nothing is not barred from capitalism if it can make money. From an animal brothel to child sex trafficking. If money can be made doing it, I guarantee you it's being done. If money can be made opening up a butcher shop that only sells human flesh, there will be butcher shops that sell human flesh. Capitalism is one of the most corrupting forces ever invented by man, and most dangerous. It's more dangerous than nuclear power and weapons. Sips tea. But Obama could have unleashed the full forces of the government like Nixon did. Obama could have had a reverse COINTELPRO. He could have had a COINTELPRO against white nationalist organizations and their efforts to infiltrate the police departments and their efforts to infiltrate the military. But he didn't. He had a beer summit with a racist cop. And that racist cop was actually giving Gates, Skip Gates, his nigga wake-up call. I hate to use that language. The Negro wake-up call. He gave Skip Gates his Negro wake-up call. And Obama said, let's have a beer summit. You know, is he going to have a beer summit with the fascists that killed Corinne Gates? Remember when Obama used to say teachable moment? I guess he just couldn't say it. He would sound stupid every time there's an atrocity. Teachable moment, teachable moment, teachable moment. He stopped saying that. And I'm sure his handlers, because Obama's like a robot. They program him. So they had to delete that from his software. He doesn't call things teachable moments anymore because what they really are is atrocities. Human rights violations, state-sanctioned crimes, but he called them teachable moments. It's an insult. It's an absolute insult. So I didn't get into what I had planned to get in today, because, like I said, I can't catch a break, which is absurd for me to say because, I mean, our people are dying. And, I mean, welcome to the Broken Record Show. Welcome to the Broken Record Show and this broken society. Obama could do more without Congress. He doesn't need the approval of Congress. He didn't need the approval of Congress to negotiate the TP, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. He didn't need the approval of Congress to subvert the Libyan government and provoke the mass slaughter and lynching, open lynching of black Africans by Arab extremists in Libya. Obama directly provoked that. He didn't need permission from Congress, the Republicans, to go and provoke the second Cold War by trying to expand NATO to the Russian border and subverting Ukraine's democracy, to subvert an attempt to overthrow and eventually assassinate, I believe, Hugo Chavez and the Bolivarian Revolution. He didn't need congressional approval for any of that. But when he want to do something for us, it's easy to fall back on the Republicans. And you Negroes who told me since I was a little kid in the projects that I can't blame the white man, even though the white man's directly to blame. You would let Obama blame the white. If he can't, I didn't have $1 trillion budget. a full detail of Secret Service agents to defend my life, staff of shelf, and people to make my bed and polish my shoes and write my speeches. I didn't have all that. Obama got all that, and he still get, how you get at the top and you get access to blaming the white man when the people at the bottom are not allowed to? Where they do that at? How, Sway? How? So I say if anybody should not be able to blame the Republicans, i.e. the white man, it shouldn't be Obama. And Obama knows, hey, I can just be like, yo, mean old Republicans won't let me love y'all like I do. So, and we fall for it. We perpetuate these lies and myths. Obama owes us. Obama is the president of Black America. We don't have to feel ashamed or that we're begging. Bush got in on the evangelical vote. The moment Bush got in, he put in faith-based initiatives, which funneled millions of federal dollars to the evangelical people who got him elected. Do you understand? Bill Clinton was the first corporate-crat, the first corporate Democrat elected to the White House, and he kicked in. Every president in U.S. history has had specific policies and specific allocations to those who helped them get there. So if somebody's telling you Obama don't owe black people nothing, they're lying. He owes us everything and has given us nothing, and we have celebrated it. Hillary Clinton owes us too. If it wasn't for the black vote. Now, I think Hillary, white folks gonna carry, because a lot of hip white folks know Hillary's a white nationalist. Hillary gonna represent. But she would have never got the nomination if not for the black southern vote. And black folks willing to get up and tell lies to the community. John Lewis, Representative John Lewis, willing to get up and tell lies about Hillary's history on civil rights. Anyway, we're coming up on the last leg. Brother Diallo, Q4 Radio. You can reach me live on the air, 312-985-7834. I don't like the structure of this show. Too much emotionalism, I guess. Unprofessional. You know. Again, we got to change the status quo. It ain't enough to reform the police departments. It ain't enough to even go out on reactionary and commit reactionary violence. These people don't care. Them brothers that killed one or two cops, I have to tell you, both of those brothers were in the military. Both of those brothers saw firsthand that this state, that the elites in this nation, in order to sustain the status quo, were willing to package and ship tens of thousands of good red-blooded Americans overseas to die in the sand. So you think they're going to care about some dead cops? When I used to do the protest thing, I used to say to the cops, they don't care about you. And in some nations, cops wake up. In some revolutionary movements, you know, we're talking about Ukraine. When Ukraine was fighting to get out from behind the Iron Curtain, they sent the dictators would send out the police to attack the people. Then the police would go out and hand their guns over to the people. The police would walk out and strip off their body armor and stand with the people. You know, some of my favorite people, some people, my, you know, brother that I, my, one of my uncles was a cop who was more of a father to me than my father ever was. One of the men I greatly admire, but we Jefferson men, we ain't the most mushy types. But one of the men I admire, he was a cop for 30 years. So I understand these cops, they come home. You know, it's like KRS-One said, they want a salary and they want kids. They want a life. But, you know, y'all cops, man, you got to pick black over blue. If you're good cops, do sit-ins at your police stations. If you're a good cop, if you really believe, hey, those cops don't represent me, do a sit-in. Do a barricade to police stations. Slap some cuffs on those so-called bad cops. Snitch. Collect documents like that. Those cops in New York, the one cop that recorded his supervisor. There's more than one instance of good cops. Now, that's a good cop. the policeman that recorded his supervisor encouraging him to racially profile black folks. Expose the racism. Take your phone and take pictures of the swastikas and the nooses in the locker room. Stop laughing at the racist jokes. Walk in the precinct and do a sit-in. Show us. Don't just be a good cop in your heart and in your emotion. Join the struggle for the people against fascist genocidal oppression. You know, you got to put up. You got to bring some to get some.
That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. Stand clear. Done, man, atop. You can't stand where I stand. You can't walk where I walk. Watch out. We run New York. Policeman come. We bust him out the park. Wicked overseer, your hot shot, you wanna get props and be a savior. First show a little respect, change your behavior, change your attitude, change your plan. There could never really be justice or stolen land. Are you really for peace and equality? Or when my car's hooked up, you know you wanna follow me. Your laws are minimal, cause you won't even think about looking at the real criminal. This has got to cease, cause we be getting hyped to the sound of the police. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. There's a little truth. Open up your eye while you're checking out the boombox. Check the exercise. Take the word overseer. Like a sample. Repeat it very quickly in a true for example. Overseer. 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 Officer. 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 Yeah, officer from overseer. You need a little clarity. Check the similarity. The overseer wrote a on patrol in our nation. The overseer could stop you what you're doing. The officer will pull you over just when he's pursuing. The overseer had the right to get ill. And if you're fought back, the overseer had the right to kill. The officer has the right to arrest. And if you fight back, they put a hole in your chest. They both ride horses. After 400 years, I've got no choices. The police don't have a nickel gun. So when I'm on the streets, I walk around with a bigger one. I hear it all day. They could run the light and be upon their way.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. That's the sound of the police. That's the sound of the beast. Check out the message in a rough style. The real criminal on the COP. You check for undercover anyone.
KRSONE. I don't know. Are we boycotting Boogie Down Production catalog? Because of his absurd solidarity with Bambaataa? I don't know. Y'all let me know. Because I still bump early KRS1. But if y'all like, yo, it's time to just moratorium on BDP material, even way back in the 80s, I understand. I unite. I'm willing to have that discussion. That's the sound of the police by KRSONE. BDP, peace and unity. Let's get into some good news. On a personal note, the Green Teens Program, which is a program we're in partnership with Hales Franciscan High School Alumni Association and After School Matters and Ecologic Outreach, which is a not-for-profit founded by me, Kemet Amazubwik, and Dr. Mingo, which is a not-for-profit with the purpose of promoting green initiatives, green awareness, post-carbon economic development, sustainable, independent, ground-up, cooperative development within underserviced black communities. Because the Green Revolution is now in the designer phase, artisanal this and local that, and all these green festivals, and you go to these conferences that charge thousands of dollars to get into, where they talk about green. And right now they're trying to see how they can incorporate green with capitalism, green with imperialism. Can we have a solar-powered military? Can we have off-grid, wind-powered prisons? So unless we, the people, get out front and stay out front of this green sustainable movement, then we will have green oppression, sustainable oppression, ecological oppression. See, there's nothing inherently good or bad about most technologies, most innovations. But you have things that become, that are captured by the status quo, that become to serve the status quo. The internet, a great tool for communications all over the world. Radio. The hope and promises of all these technologies have gone kaput because they were captured by the elite oligarchical forces and perverted and devolved to serve their interests. But anyway, we created an organization that's going to try to fuse the Green Revolution with progressive ideas and with grassroots, bottom-up, socialistic applications and policies. And our GoFundMe is up to $1,145. We were able to secure a battery-powered lawnmower. Band Nation is in the building. Shout out to Band Nation following the Bro Diallo show. We were able to secure battery-powered drills and tools. We were able to secure resources to make compost bins, bales of hay, and solar panels. So we're going to be able to operate this plot of land that we operate with the support of Hales Franciscan Alumni Association, an off-grid site. We can produce food without any expenditures, where the power, everything is powered solar, off-grid, non-carbon emitting. We're actually sequestering carbon. We're trying to get to the point where instead of emitting carbon and contributing to global warming, we are sequestering carbon from the atmosphere. And this is not just a farm, it's a laboratory. And it's getting so much support from the community, from established members of the community. People that, because, you know, despite my radical ideas, when it comes to any specific progressive project, I'm willing to work with anybody that's willing to do the positive work and make positive attributions to the just aspirations of our people. So, let's end on some good news. But we who believe in freedom, we can't rest. Rest in peace to Corin Gaines. Let the community of Randallstown rally around those youths, rally around that family. And instead of focusing on the individual cops, we understand this is a systemic issue, and we have to subvert the status quo, not just reform the police. This is Brother Diallo. Thanks for tuning in. You can check the brotherdiallo.com for show archives, any speaking engagements that I have. You can Diallo Kenyatta all social media, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, blog, Facebook. It's all Diallo Pinata, all together. Until next time, peace.